Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Suns, Lakers had a little bit of everything last night. Drama, excitement, controversy, sex. It had it all. Honestly, after seeing what I saw last night, I am already looking forward to the two of them running it back. And this time, let's make it a best of seven. Like, I know the Lakers are still without Anthony Davis, Marc Gasol, Kyle Kuzma, which is why I'm not freaking out that they got beaten again. I mean, we could talk about this awesome quote from Markieff Morris.
Defensively, I played like shit.
I love that dude. He, one of my favorite dudes. Defensively, I played like ish.
Defensively, I played like shit.
My man, don't be so tough on yourself. You know, I could talk about that. Because a lot of folks were losing their minds about LA when they lost four straight, right? But then they came back, they won two in a row, including that blowout of Golden State. And then everybody calmed down and it was all fine. Which is exactly why you should not panic yet. I'll let you know when it's time to panic. It is not time to panic yet regarding LA and LA losing to Phoenix. For one thing, the Suns are no joke now. I mean, give them some bleeping credit for real.
For real.
They're nice. The Suns are nice. They're in first in the division. They're 15-3 in their last 18. They're number two overall in the West. What I'm saying is they're good. They're damn good. Monty Williams and James Jones are building a monster. They're building somebody that will give you the hands. And last night, it became official. The rest of the league was put on notice last night. The Suns sent a message last night. And yes, again, I'm completely aware that the Lakers had to go without Anthony Davis. However, the Suns played the last 19 minutes without Devin Booker. Why?
Why? Where's Devin? Why?
You know why? You know why? I have no idea. I really don't know why. Here was the ejection.
Try to force the officials to make a call. He caught that one and just immediately went to the rim.
Right in the third quarter, first of three.
Now we got a technical foul and somebody just got tossed.
Is it Booker or KCP?
Somebody just got tossed.
The referee says, I don't want any more of this. Now Booker is looking, or is he just looking at KCP? Hopefully. Booker's tossed.
Somebody's
Booker
gone.
Booker is out of the game.
Somebody is gone.
Wow. Their best player is gone.
Gone. Spectrum Sportsnet. The hell is that? I mean, that's what gets you run these days. There are quick technicals, and then there's whatever the hell that was. That was a two for Tuesday ejection. Buy one, get the second one for free. If one is good, two is better. Look, I'm not on the court, so I'm not sure if that first tee was warranted or not. Let's just say it was. Let's just say that the first one was warranted. But what was the second tee for? A bounce pass to the ref? MLB's mercy rule thinks that that ejection was stupid. Crew chief Mark Davis said after the game, quote, Booker received his first technical foul for continuous complaining, and then he received a second technical foul, and as per rule, was ejected for directing profane language at a game official, end quote. You know, to me, that's like the weakest explanation ever. Since when did directing profane language at a game official get you an automatic ejection? Because that happens all the time. And it wasn't even the original ref who gave him the second tee. It was another ref who came in from the back to finish him off. That was so soft that the TNT broadcast team didn't even know he was ejected initially. And that's not even the weirdest part. That's not even the weirdest part. Because from the looks of Twitter, after Booker was tossed, it looks as if I'm going to have to go all wordsmith on your asses yet again. Because while the... This next part of this take is graphic in nature. You have been warned. Let me say that. We're on in the middle of the day on the East Coast. We're on early in the morning on the West Coast in Pacific Standard Time. This next part of this take is graphic in nature. Good? We good? The two words in question start with the same two letters, but they have very different meanings. The first word, as it relates to Booker, is ejected. It starts with EJ. the second word that was being bandied about on Twitter, not ejected, but a ton of people used it. And it's definitely not something that happened on the court last night. Trust that. But for some reason, a lot of folks were tweeting about it at network, pointed this out, and that it became an absolute epidemic last night. I will use the word, and I will use it once, just to make sure you know what I'm talking about. Here is the actual tweet. Quote, "I can't believe Booker got ejaculated for no reason." Right. The ultimate record scratch. My man, whoever you are, that's definitely not what happened. And no credit for starting that thread. And sure, I'm as bent by the next person about the ejection, but what you said did not happen. And all these other tweets are totally wrong as well. I'm not going to say it, but you can fill in the blank on your own. But then they came. Then the onslaught. What did Devin Booker do to get blanked? I can't believe Booker got blanked for that. LeBron complains almost every time during the game, but he gets a slap on the wrist. Booker, meanwhile, gets blanked for doing the exact same thing that Bron does. NBA refs effing suck. I could keep going because there are a lot more where those came from, but I'm going to stop and I'll leave it with this one. Quote, "Devin Booker just got blanked for literally no reason. NBA has to do something about these refs, man." Look, I have no idea what y'all were watching last night, but I know what you thought it was. Porno. But that's not what that was. That was hoops. Maybe bad hoops because of bad officiating, but that definitely was not what Ejaculation Nation was trying to make it out to be. All right? I don't know if that's your autocorrect working overtime or if you just don't know the difference between the two, but something needs to change because you're not helping them, you're hurting them, and you shouldn't be tweeting about ejaculation on the internet, man.
Helping kids is hurting them wrong.
Can we just talk basketball? Is that too hard, honestly? You would think the Suns, in fact, this is what I want to do. I want to talk basketball. You'd think the Suns would be finished after Booker was well, whatever he was. But the Suns did not roll over. That's the story here. The Suns did not roll over and nap it out after Booker EJ'd. Was EJ'd. Instead of losing that 7-point lead that they had with Booker, they got better without him. When LA went on a run to cut that lead to 3 at the end of the third, Phoenix responded with a run of their own to get back up by 10 to beat LA back. They hit more than 50% from deep. Their bench outplayed LA's admittedly thin bench at that moment, and they found a way to win. Remember, this is a team that went to the bubble last year and went 8-0 and looked like a totally different crew. Then they come back this season, and they get even better. And last night, there was a message for the rest of the league. We're not on the come. We are here. We are dangerous, and you really do not want these hands. Brass, man. Brass knuckles. Brass as hell. And what the Suns did, they did without Devin Booker. That was impressive. What the refs did to Devin Booker, not impressive. And what a bunch of you dopes on Twitter did in trying to turn this into porno was the worst of all. And get your freak on someplace else. By yourself, per usual. Look, I'm here to talk about what happened to Devin Booker, not Dirk Diggler. I mean, after seeing what Twitter did to that game, I had to make my 16-year-old Logan leave the room. Leave the room, stop watching the game, turn off his phone, because any reference to a 2-on-1, triple-doubles, banging the boards, boxing out, reverse pivots, cylinder. You know, the kid's laughing and giggling like one of you pervs. I had to tell him, hey, shut it down. Let's go home, Logan. He's like, Dad, we are home. And it's my birthday. I said, I don't give a damn, son. Just shut it down then. Do it now. Happy birthday, Logs. Now get your bleeping license so your mother and I can quit our jobs as your chauffeur. I'm telling you, look out for the Suns. That's my message here. Look out for the Suns. There is another fighter in the octagon. The Suns. They look tough. 1-800. No. No. Wow. Shut up, Rit. Alvin. Wow. Alvy wants to be involved in the show all of a sudden. Hey, listen, are you craving some protein after a good workout? I'm guessing you are. This time, don't make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Reach for a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper instead. Why Old Trapper? I'll tell you why. Number one, it's tasty. It's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it's a family-owned business that takes their business extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. On top of that, who wants dried, rough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper is the real deal. It comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned, Teriyaki, Peppered, and Hot and Spicy. So the next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for it in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Dave Roberts is my guest. Dave, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Romy, my man, I'm doing great. First off, I want to thank you for the jungle karma that led to a 2020 World Series championship. So thank you, my friend, and it's good to reconnect with you.
My man, that is so great to hear, Dave. I appreciate you saying that so much. I'm not sure that the karma had anything to do with that, but I appreciate you saying it. And although I can't root, they pay me not to root, I was so happy to see you get that done and to see the crew get it done. Let me ask you, Dave, when you look back on last season, when you consider all the sacrifices that you made, that the staff made, that the players made to get through that season, what does it mean to have that season end with that chip, with that world championship?
I'm telling you, Romy, I think it's everything. It really is. And I think that, you know, any championship is memorable and means something. But I think that, you know, looking going into 20 where people were talking asterisks with the shortened season. And I think that when you look back at 20, there's an exclamation mark. And I think that 2020 is going to be remembered from all of us, by all of us. And to know that we are the world champs and what we overcame individually, collectively, on the field, off the field, to ultimately hold that trophy, I think is going to be really memorable for all of us.
Dave Roberts joining us. So what's it like, Dave, to hold that trophy? For instance, when you consider the process, and I know you're always focused on the process, when you finally get there and you get to hold that thing, I mean, what's the emotion? Is it joy? Is it relief? Is it something else?
It was joy initially. And then shortly thereafter, relief. And I think one of the things is, as an athlete, as a competitor, you never want to address pressure. You never want to address, you know, expectations as far as what are put on you individually or an organization. But after accomplishing that as an organization, I did feel that weight quickly subside. So I guess, I mean, it's certainly real, but there's just so much elation. And just to kind of look back, Romy, I watched Game 6 just recently, and in World Series in the past, I never went back and watched them, but had a chance to review and look at it and watch the celebrations of the players, the fans. Pretty special.
Yeah, that's really something, Dave. Like, the point that you just made, well, number one, the point that you never actually go back and watch it and did, I think that's cool. Number two, that point, though, about you never really, as a professional athlete or even in management or leadership, you don't want to address pressure. It's just kind of taboo. You don't want to give into that. You don't want anybody to think that maybe it's in your head. But the fact is, it's there. You got to somehow deal with it and process it. So if you don't address it, how do you process it and make sure you use it for you instead of against you?
I think the way we do it is I learned from, as a player with the Red Sox, and it was Kevin Millar who really articulated it, is don't let us win tonight. And just that whole mindset of just win one game at a time. And for me to see it kind of play out in a sense of you're in a spot where you can really bear down one game at a time and ultimately come back and win a series. So for me, that's already been played out, and I've seen it happen. So I can talk about it and see that that's a process that can work. So I'll tell you, after game four in the Braves series, there was no team meeting. That players got on a text thread and said, brush it aside, let's win tomorrow. And we took Clayton had the baseball, we won that game, we won that series three straight, and we just took it on the World Series. So even after that tough loss in the World Series, we bounced back after game five and won a baseball game. And I think that's how we combat that pressure, Romy.
Dodgers manager Dave Roberts is joining us. Dave, one more thought about winning it in your position. After you were named manager, you and I talked, and we talked about the history of the organization. We talked about what the organization means on so many different levels. You're not going to make it about you. I understand that. But what's it mean to you to know that you will go down in history as somebody who led the Dodgers to a World Series title?
That's overwhelming. Someone just mentioned it to me, just recently. As far as Los Angeles Dodgers, it's Walt Alston, it's Tommy, and myself, and that's a very obviously elite company. So I really don't let my mind go there very often. I'm kind of in the now. But to take a step back and to have Cito Gaston give me a call as the first African American manager to win a World Series, and to know it in that context with this organization, pretty overwhelming.
Dave Roberts joining us. You know, it certainly has to be, Dave. I'm curious, when you look at the NL West, I talked to Adrian Gonzalez on my podcast the other day, and he was all fired up because he's been on both sides. He played for the Padres. He played for the Dodgers. He's fascinated by the NL West. And, you know, you see what the Padres are doing, and they're coming strong. This suddenly is not a small market team that won't take that big swing. They are loading up, and they're coming fast. I'm curious how you process that part of it. Do you see what they're doing? Do you concern yourself with that? Or is the mindset always, you know what, we don't have to deal with them. They have to deal with us.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is obviously I applaud Peter Seidler, who has Dodger pedigree with the O'Malley's, and A.J. Preller, what they're doing, you know, locking up Tatis, one of the game's best players. And, you know, they've got a farm system. They've done a great job. So obviously we understand what they're doing. The geography speaks to a rivalry. It's great for Southern California. It's fantastic for the NL West. It's great for baseball. But I think for me, and you said it, I think the main thing for us is to continue what we do. And I like that old Vince Lombardi. It's, you know, we're going to go student body left, student body right. You know, they know we're coming. We just got to mind our own blocking assignments, and, we'll be fine. So I think that's what I really believe intrinsically with our club.
Dave Roberts, my guest. It's not like you stood pat either. You add Trevor Bauer. You already had a great, great rotation last season. And then you add a Cy Young Award winner. What was your reaction when that became official? What does he bring to the club?
I was like, let's go.
Right. You know it.
You know, so Trevor is a Bruin. I'm a Bruin. So we kind of run in similar but different circles. I've admired him from afar for many years, obviously, and rooted for him. Just having a chance to be teammates with him and coach him, I'm excited about it. I know he's thrilled about rooting for or playing now for the team he rooted for as a kid. And Romy, we've had many conversations already about culture, leadership. He's just so cerebral, so curious about data and, you know, our pitch development guys. He's already kind of back and forth with those guys and just really understands his body. He's always evolving, which is great, but I think he's going to be obviously a huge get for the Dodgers.
I think, Dave, it's a given, number one, how effective he is as a guy who takes the ball. It's a given how interested he is in the analytics. When you talk about culture and leadership, like, what kind of things did you discuss with him?
I think the thing is he's just really intrigued by the fact that you could have a performance coach in a bullpen session or a strength and conditioning coach in the batting cage with the hitting coach, and how the players, coaches, and different medical and training staff and coaching staff all are integrated. And how does that come to be? Because a lot of what he's known in sports, it's all separate, and everyone's got their own lanes, as we call it in baseball. And we blur those lines, and he's just really curious and how we go about, you know, each day and always. You know, if I'm thinking the same things, next year, then I'm not growing. And I think for me, with culture and leadership, we're always trying to grow.
Dave, that's so interesting what you just said. Like, there are lanes, right? There are lanes. And in fact, there were lanes that weren't even constructed back in the day. And now we have this crazy super highway when all these lanes run together. Exactly how do you make that work?
It's constant. It's a constant not battle, but it's constant conversations. And I think for me, Romy, I have a lot of joy when I see crossover, when I see pitching guys talking hitting guys, because, you know, and I see the infield guy, Dino Ebo, talking to hitting coaches and talking about swing paths and talking to Mark Pryor, our pitching coach. And for me, it's complete elation. And I think that's where people always ask about the Dodgers and the secret sauce and how we get – guys to realize their full potential, whether it's Chris Taylor or Max Muncy. It's because when they come into this environment, it's an environment for people to thrive individually and ultimately collectively.
Dave Roberts joining me for a few more moments. Mark Pryor was something else, man. What a great pitcher. Like, what great command, pitcher. The way he handled himself. What's he been like to have around?
Mark's been great. We were at odds early. He was a Trojan, Romy.
He was.
He can align with me with the UC schools. So he was a Trojan, so I didn't think too fondly of him. But we share the same agent, John Boggs, and he kind of made that connection. But Mark was a great player, went and worked in the front office for the Padres. I was lucky enough to have him as our pitching coach, and he is fantastic. Has a relationship with the players, really good content. He'll be a major league manager at some point, I have no doubt.
Now, Dave, what you just said is so interesting to me. You mentioned now a couple of times that you're a Bruin. You're a Bruin. And before you came on earlier in the program, I had a conversation with golfer Colin Morikawa, who went to UC Berkeley. And I started the conversation by saying, you're the pride of Cal, and I want to say that we UC guys stick together. I went to UC Santa Barbara. You went to UC Berkeley. I've got a podcast, Dave, with Brian Shaw, former NBA grade who went to UC Santa Barbara. And you yourself have said it. I didn't bring it up, but you are a UC family, a UC guy. What did the college baseball experience mean to you, and how much pride do you have in the fact that you are a product of the UC system?
I have a lot of pride. I really do. I think the UC system is probably the best academic system, in my opinion, and I think especially bang for your buck, and am I biased? Absolutely. But I think for me, college baseball was where I really evolved into not just a three-sport athlete, but a baseball player, and I grew as a man and adult. These are some of my best friends, Romy. My college roommates, my college teammates, and I don't know, my son's playing college baseball right now, and some of the best times of my life, I always look back at my time at UCLA pretty fondly.
I love that. You know, when you talk about bang for your buck, and by the way, Dave, I'm sure they're tired of me saying it. I just don't give a damn, all right? I'm really proud that I'm a product of that public school system. I'm really proud. Really proud that I'm a product of the UC system. Dave, not to age myself, but I'm not a young guy anymore. When I went to UC Santa Barbara, the quarterly BARC statement, the tuition was $500 a quarter for tuition. Is that any good? You think you're getting much bang for your buck? $500 a quarter.
Dude, that is, you can't debate that, man. The UC system, best bang for your buck.
$500. I appreciate
ridiculous.
It.
Ridiculous.
Isn't that the best thing ever, man? That is so good. Too bad that none of us could ever get into these UC schools anymore today.
No doubt.
But $500. Listen, last thought. What, in talking to coaches and managers from across the sports world, it always comes up. After you win a world championship, you are just seen. You are viewed differently. My question, Dave, do you feel any differently?
I don't know, you know, Romy. I think probably, I guess now that we finally crossed the finish line and we are world champions, so they can't take that away. So I think that there is some, again, it goes back to, man, we did it. So we are world champions, and a lot of the stuff, and Romy, you and I talk a lot about process. So it just, the world is results driven, and it does matter. So it just validates a lot of the things that we as the Dodgers believe. So I do think that the industry sees us different, and we finally got it done. So certainly very proud.
Hell yes. Congratulations for that. So you've got a championship as a player, a championship as a manager, and a championship as a Dodger manager. He is Dave Roberts and a good, good friend of the program. Dave, I appreciate you so much. Great to get caught up. Congrats on that, and I'm eager to see you again this season. Thank you very much, Dave.
Can't wait, Romy. Thanks for having me on.
Even the biggest Brady haters had to sit their asses down for a few hours and just wear it and respect it. Maybe not like it, but you had to wear that and respect that. And since that day, we haven't heard that much from the guy. Except that did change last night when he showed up via Zoom on the Late Late Show with James Corden. Either the dude was fiercely hung for 2 weeks or just picking his spot or both. The most memorable moment of that boat parade obviously was when Brady threw the Lombardi from his rig to Cameron Brate. Brate was about 15 feet away on another vessel. Nothing but river water separating the two of them. So a lot has been made about that dime. And for good reason. Considering how wild and awesome and risky and unexpected and even out of character that was. But everything that anybody could possibly say about that had already been said. There was nothing new to add, except for the one guy we had not heard from, the guy who actually was drunk enough to throw it in the first place. Finally, this guy showed up and had something to say about it.
Was there any bit of you thinking, what do I do if this goes in the water?
Okay, first of all, I was not thinking at that moment. There was not a thought. It was, this seems like really fun to do. And not to mention, when you get your hands on one of those trophies, there are a lot of really sharp edges on the bottom, you know, yeah, where the stand is. Obviously, the ball is what it is. But, and then I found out later that had that been an incomplete pass, that would have went down like 80 feet.
Oh. All right. So first things first, credit to the host for really hamming it up with that fake laughter and selling it hard. I mean, Tom Brady is not a tenth as funny as Corden just made him sound right there. That's just good hosting. Good job, man. Make your guy feel comfortable. However, we did actually get some good intel and some good insight. Apparently, the Lombardi is just as jagged and sharp as it seems on TV, because you heard Brady point that out in the answer. So essentially, this guy was throwing a 7-pound three-blade knife through the air, and Brady somehow caught it without getting cut. Then there's the part where Brady reveals that somebody told him afterwards that the trophy would have gone down 80 feet to the bottom of the river. 80 feet. Dude, that is deep, really deep. And if you think that nobody would have strapped on the scuba gear to go in after it, then you would be right, because the Tampa Bay Bucks told ESPN, quote, they would have just ordered a replacement. It's not that big of a deal. We can just get another one. We can just hammer out another one. Somewhere in Fort Myers, an overly proud daughter of a silversmith just rage fainted. Do you remember Lorraine Gross? She's the lady whose dad apparently hammered out the first Lombardi back in 67 so Brady could get hammered with it in 2021. She's also the lady who was big time mad and raging that Brady had the audacity to party with her old man's life's work at a championship boat parade.
It just really upset me that this trophy was disgraced and disrespected by being thrown as if it was a real football. I didn't sleep for the past two nights because of this. I was that upset because I know the passion that goes into this trophy and how my dad and all his fellow silversmiths are so proud to make this. I personally would like an apology, not just to me and my family and the other silversmiths, but to the fans.
Incredible. You mean it took more than one person to make that? You had a team of silversmiths involved with that? Her whole thing is like, I just can't believe how disgraceful and disrespectful it was to the people who put in all the work on that trophy. Lorraine, are you telling me that your old man and his team put more time and effort into that trophy than Tom Brady and his team did in winning that trophy? Yeah, I wouldn't be holding your breath for that apology. Not only is Brady not apologizing, he's laughing about it with James Corden on TV and saying that he doesn't even remember doing it. And the Bucks are telling ESPN that, well, if Brady dropped it and it hit the bottom of that drink, we'll just get another one. How hard could it be? We could just go to Amazon, you know, like order within 3 hours and 31 minutes and get it the next day with Amazon Prime. How's that grab you, L? Anyway, Corden then shows Tom the famous video of him coming off that boat, totally wrecked, struggling, staggering around, and being held up by a backup quarterback.
What is this? Is this sea legs? Or dare I say it, a touch of tequila?
Oh, man. I think a little of both. A little of both. It was definitely a moment of celebration. I'm happy I'm on land at that point. Absolutely. Happy I'm being surrounded by my fellow quarterback, Griff, in the right place at the right time.
He really
who could have a friend better than that? Yeah. Just, you know, making sure I was just so comfortable walking off the boat like that.
Boy, this nerd is something else. He still sounds drunk from that day. But man, he's a happy drunk. Griff is Ryan Griffin. Ryan Griffin is the third-string quarterback. Griff's job, apparently, just went from holding a clipboard to holding Tom Brady. And he got a ring for it. Good gig, man. Good gig. Good freaking work if you can get it. And finally, with a lot of help from James Corden, who set this one up on a tee, Brady takes the extremely rare shot at another NFL team.
I'm constantly thinking this, Tom, that you are only a year older than me, right? You're performing at your peak.
Yeah.
You're doing it. Be honest. Do you think it's too late for me to be drafted?
Being completely honest,
yeah.
You have zero chance.
Okay, I might not make Tampa, but I could play for the Jets.
You might be able to play for the Jets.
There you go. That's
actually,
all I needed.
Right,
that's all
that.
I needed.
TB43 went there. Dude just roasted the Jets. He just said that, well, portly? James Corden could play quarterback for the Jets. My man Sam Darnold eviscerated. Robert Saleh nuked. New York City and Jersey blown right off the face of the earth. Here's my takeaway. Here's what I learned last night. Brady is still way more compelling playing the game than he is talking about the game or really talking at all. The Lombardi Trophy sure as hell does not mean as much as a silversmith's daughter thinks it does. Actually, I didn't even learn those things. I already knew those things. Somebody tell me something that I did not already know. But how about this guy? Like, he will not go away. And strangely, I can't stop talking about him. There's your update. You want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit on how much you can earn. How amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you consider all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen report. Limitations do apply. He is the pride of Cal. Colin Morikawa is my guest. Colin, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Great to be here, Jim.
Listen, Colin, great to have you here. And there's a lot that I want to talk to you about, but I want to first bring up that last thing I said, the pride of Cal. Now, I don't want to jam this in there or force anything, but we UC guys need to stick together. I'm UC Santa Barbara. You're UC Berkeley. I've got to know, what was the college experience like and how much pride do you have in having attended that school?
I love it. Everything that I've kind of done since I've graduated, you know, I wear that sleeve really proudly going to Cal. It means a lot, you know, especially that I was able to get my degree, get my Haas Business School degree out of there. And, you know, just to see back-to-back wins with myself and Max Homa, you know, it shows that the Pac-12, the West Coast, we are strong. We have really great athletes that come out of these schools.
My man, that's what I'm talking about. UC Berkeley is great, and we got to stick together. Now, you take me back a few days. You were the leader after three rounds. You go to sleep Saturday night with that lead. You wake up knowing that everybody is coming for you. How did you sleep that night, and what's that feeling like when you know you've got that bullseye on your back?
I slept great, and, you know, I don't think everyone can say that, you know, when they're sleeping on the lead, but this is my first time sleeping on a 54-hole lead outright, and I knew, you know, you look at the field and you have Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, you have Victor Hovland, Patrick Reed, you know, the list keeps going on and on with the powerhouses that were right behind me. But I trusted my game, I trusted how I was playing, and knew if I just put up a solid number that I could kind of hold off these guys unless someone really took it deep.
I mean, what's that like, for instance? It's one thing to win. It's always going to be tough to win on tour no matter where you are, what weekend it is, what the track is. But when you finish three strokes ahead of the likes of Billy Horschel, Brooks Koepka, Victor Hovland, I mean, every win is great, but is there an extra level of satisfaction that when you go into Sunday with that lead and you beat a field, which includes 48 of the top 50 golfers in the world, does it mean even more?
Yeah, I mean, it just shows where my game's at. And, you know, obviously I struggled a little bit after that PGA in the fall of 2020, and I kind of made a turn. I made a different mental state at the beginning of this year, and I really dedicated myself to coming out here and working hard. So, you know, finally putting some pieces together, seeing some results, it's really good to see. It's really gratifying, and it's just, you know, pumps me up to get ready for these next few months of just really big events coming up.
I don't want to lose that point, Colin. I think that's really interesting what you said, because I've heard you say that in the past, that there was that stretch last year where, quote, I got complacent, I was getting lazy, end quote. I think that's what you meant when you just said, I kind of had a change in my mindset. When did you notice that, and how were you able to break that chain or that mindset?
Yeah, it was kind of right around the fall or the November Masters. You know, I'd missed a couple cuts. I missed the U.S. Open. I missed the cut in Vegas where I live. And I just wasn't okay with that. You know, I love playing weekends. I love getting in contention, and I love that feeling. You know, that's what we live for. I love for that competitiveness coming down the stretch, having a chance to win. And, you know, I just had to be honest with myself that, you know, I was still working hard. I was going out to practice, getting ready to play well. I just thought that, you know, good golf was going to happen, and that's never the case in anything you do, and whether it's golf, sports, or just life in general, you got to work for it. So, you know, it's just a small little mindset change that I kind of talked to my coach about, and we kind of got things straightened out, and, you know, we started this year with back-to-back T7s in Hawaii.
You know, you're a pretty young guy to figure that out and understand that, and then to also apply it. Colin Morikawa is my guest. Then in the post-round interview on Sunday, it was mentioned that you had just accomplished something again that only Tiger Woods had done. And you said, quote, I don't think we say thank you enough, so I want to say thank you to Tiger, end quote. Why was that something that was important for you to say in that moment?
You know, everything that's happened, you know, over the past week, obviously Tiger had the car accident, and there's just some eerie feelings about what happened with Kobe, obviously, roughly a year ago. And I think, you know, we celebrate so many people after we lose them, and it sucks, you know, because they deserve all the credit in the world because of what they've done to help other people, how they've changed other people's lives when they're alive. And, you know, I just want to say thank you to Tiger, and I had to. And I think everyone should, whether it's their role model or someone they're with or whoever it may be, you know, a thank you goes a long way. And sometimes people just don't hear that enough. So, you know, that's kind of how it came out. You know, it was just all emotion right there. And it's something I really felt deep down.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Thank you does go a long way. I want to ask you about somebody else, too. You thanked your late grandfather. He passed away recently. For those who don't know him, what kind of an impact did he have on you? What was your grandfather like?
Yeah, you know, he was a super chill guy. He was about 91, so he was, you know, he was pretty old, and he kind of lived with my parents in our back house. And whenever I was home, he'd always come over for dinner, and that was the best part of his day. You know, he'd see his two grandsons, and we'd have a great dinner, and we'd talk. And I think that's where I kind of got all my eating habits from, because he would just eat nonstop, and you know, that always put a smile on my face. But he loved sports. You know, he loved watching sports, especially as he got older. He would just always have ESPN on. He'd have Golf Channel. And to finally see me on TV, you know, especially during, like, the PGA, you know, I knew I put a smile on his face, and I know he's watching down.
And no doubt. What a kick that is. Colin Morikawa joining us. The story goes that you and Paul Azinger also spent some time together working on your short game. What was your takeaway from your time with Zinger?
Oh, I mean, it was huge. And, you know, if you look at my stats, I think, you know, I've been struggling, obviously, huge on putting and huge on chipping. And they kind of go one with each other, because if I chip it really bad, then I miss a putt. They both look awful. So, you know, I've been able to reach out to Marco Mira. Obviously, I reached out to Paul Azinger last week, and we kind of just worked on some really basic stuff, just how to use the bounce, how to get the club through the ground. And the same thing with Marco Mira. You know, they're not telling me necessarily what to do. They're just giving me another opinion, another insight on how to look at a shot. And that's kind of how I changed my putting grip. I saw what Mark was doing. I was intrigued. And it, you know, it made sense. There are reasons why I did it. I didn't do it just because, you know, I thought it felt or looked okay. I did it because there was actually reasons why my other putting stroke wasn't doing so well.
All right, so when you talked to Omira, you broke out the saw grip. I'm kind of curious, like, that's an old school dude. Great guy, by the way. Really good guy, and had
amazing.
A great career. I'm kind of curious how that relationship went. I mean, he is old school. How did you react to him? How did he react to you?
Yeah, you know, I saw him. We practiced at the same course in Vegas, the Summit Club. And, you know, I saw him putting like this for one day. So the next day I went out to go play 18 holes and tried it. And, you know, I never think about golf things when I'm really like going to sleep, and I never lose sleep over it. This was probably the first time I actually lost sleep about something in my golf game. And I knew it was just so fascinating because I had never felt my putting like this. And, you know, whether I putt well or I don't, something I was heading down the right path. So I saw him the next day, asked him, we talked for maybe 35, 45 minutes, maybe even an hour, just about why he did it, why he made the change. And so he looked at my stroke a little bit and we just kind of went from there. And from now it's just, you know, getting the sample size a little large enough to really see the difference.
Hey, Colin, a couple of quick things before you go. I just think that at your age, I think between the years, I think your mental game is so, so strong. I'm curious, have you always been like this, or is this something you consciously really work at, like every part of your game?
I appreciate that. I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's just who I am. You know, I love to think about things. I'm pretty analytical. I love just getting as much knowledge as I can and kind of feeding that through my brain and what I need and what I don't need. But a lot goes to my coach. You know, he's been my swing coach and mental coach, Rick Sessinghaus, for the past 16 years. You know, I've worked with him since I've been 8. So he's been able to implement things here and there, but absolutely you have to work on it. And that's the thing, you know, you go back to fall of 2020, you know, I wasn't as clear and I wasn't working on that mental side as much. And now after every week, after every couple rounds, you know, I'm talking to my coach and we're really trying to figure out what was good, what was bad, because I don't want to go down that path of what happened, you know, 5 some months ago.
Colin Morikawa, my guest, I got one final question for you. Horschel said this of you, and I quote, I've said for a year plus now, he's the one that everyone's got to look out for. He went on to say, quote, he's a great iron player, but I don't think people understand how great being an iron player out here is. Tiger did that for years. Everybody talked about his distance, but he was the best iron player, best wedge player for a decade plus, and that's one of the reasons why he was so successful, end quote. I think that's really key. In your opinion, what does it take to be a great iron player?
Well, I mean, that's awesome, and it's amazing for Billy to say. It was a great 2-day final pairing with them. But, you know, what does it take? It just takes a lot of creativity. It's able to work the ball and have full control over the golf ball on what shot you want to hit and knowing your misses. I think that's the biggest thing that people don't understand is that, you know, we have it down to where we know where we might miss the shot and we'll take out a certain area of the golf course. But yeah, you know, I think that's why, you know, it's my game's not flashy. I'm not hitting the long ball. I'm not making a billion putts out there. But I'm trying to get the ball in, you know, in as least amount of strokes as possible. And I think when you look at iron play, that's been my game, my entire life.
I have a beef with my coworkers who are not able to compose a 2-lined email without a sea of grammatical errors. If you have health insurance and a pension, chances are you passed the third grade and you should be familiar with something called punctuation. Furthermore, adding a smiley emoji or an LOL does not replace a period at the end of a sentence. Regards, Susie from Wisco. You know what? Before you crack her, I agree with her. I'm with you on that, Susie. Well done. Rome, my beef is with Wells being too stupid to read instructions on his microwave popcorn. You have to adjust your time based on the wattage of your microwave, fat boy.
Fat!
Pete in Elko. I approve that message. What's up, fat boy? Check the wattage, fat boy. Rome, I have beef with my mother-in-law telling me she's going to start losing weight by eating more salads. She ordered a taco salad, Rome, in a fried bowl with ground beef, ranch, and fistfuls of cheese. Chad in Orlando. She's going to start losing weight by ordering a salad, and she went taco salad in a fried bowl with ground beef. You mean with one of those super fried, gigantic tostada chips around it? And she started eating that thing too, right? Romy, my beef is with coworkers who use exclamation points in their emails. I'm fine with their enthusiasm, but now it means I have to reciprocate and use an exclamation point in my reply email. Let's all stop pretending that there's anything work-related worth using an exclamation point for. Thanks, Blake in Denver. Man, that's true too. Don't you reciprocate that? I do. I absolutely reciprocate exclamation points when people hit me with that. In fact, you know what? I actually start it sometimes. He's right. At Wason Sherbert. That's a real handle. Wason Sherbert. Rome Slice, my beef is with you and your EP for ending yesterday's show with that cockfighting segment and not allowing time to read the JTP tweets after. War Chicken Man's caca! Yeah, there's a reason why I did that. Wason, that was the reason. Romy, I got beef. Caca! You got to give me that whole thing. I need that whole thing in context. Let's go to Orlando. Hi, who's this?
Romy, they call me the Chicken Man.
Really, why?
I have been on a bit of a healthy kick as of late, and all I do is eat chicken for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I am practically bringing these poor fowls to the brink of extinction. Not to mention the fact that the chicks love me, and I have a big rooster.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
I am practically bringing these fowls to the brink of extinction. Not to mention the chicks love me because I have a big rooster. Romy, I got beef with people that can't even wait to pay for their groceries before they start to eat them. And then attempt to pay for the item by setting the empty wrapper on the check stand. Hey, knob. I'm here to get my groceries and get out, not watch you choke down an almond joy. Danny in the 402. I like that one. That's strong. Rome, I got beef with wine guy engaging in a 10-step process before he can take a sip of his vinegary grape juice, decantering the liquid, swirling the glass, letting it breathe, chewing the wine, gargling, etc. Just drink it, you pretentious oaf. Drew in West LA, well done. Dear Rome, I got beef with people calling themselves foodies. How very unique you are. Stop using tacos as your personality. Well done. Nick in Westchester near LAX. Dear Pimp in the Box, my beef is with wives who expect husbands to know exactly what they are thinking and exactly what they want every second of the day. Do the grown-up thing and just communicate with me and all will be good. Yours, pretty much every husband ever. Johnny and GB. Hey, John, thanks for speaking for every husband ever.
Hey, John.
Time to meet Mr. Rome. Giddy up, horse face!
Hey, John, time to meet Mr. Rome. Giddy up, horse face! Come on, girl, come on.
Hey, Jim, my beef is with the guy at the office that says, beep, beep. When he needs to scoot around me. It's not that hard to say, pardon me, excuse me, or can I sneak by? You're a grown-ass man, not a car. Hey, John, people don't do that at your office, do they?
Hey,
has another grown-ass man really said, beep, beep, when they had to pass you? Hey, Rome, what's my beef? The dude who can't sit down for 10 minutes straight at the team meeting and has to walk around the room to, quote, be able to think more clearly. Why don't we just get rid of the conference table and walk in circles while we meet? Signed, Jeff Ciro. Great job. Great job. Let's go to the phones. Beef by phone, 1-800-636-8686. First stop, the Bay. CJ in the Bay. CJ, what's your beef?
Yo, Rome, I got fat beef here. I got beef with all the clones taking shots at the jungle content king Hawk. I got beef with your insistence that the Bay hates LA. We actually are better than everybody. We don't really hate anybody. We really don't care. And I got beef with bad leadership, Buster Posey being a coward. I mean, you don't let guys charge the mound ever. So he should just retire with take his bum ass teammate belt with him. That in LA is trash. War, big nation.
Dude, I mean, like five beefs and none of them good. Did you say Buster Posey should take his bum ass with him and retire? Did you literally just try to tell me that you in the Bay Area don't hate? that you don't hate SoCal, that you don't hate LA, that you have beef with me for saying that. CJ, nobody hates anything as much as you all hate us in LA. What do you mean you don't hate anything? Oh, we're just better, Rome. We really don't hate anybody at all. You know why? We're better than everybody. Are you kidding me about that? Dude, you hate us? Man, you hate us more than anybody hates anybody. And why? Smog, traffic, we take your water, we're better than you. Man, stop. Stop lying, dude. You can beef all you want. Just don't lie. Just don't beef lies. Stop the lies. 1-800-636-8686. You're a liar, CJ. You might not be a felon, but you are a liar. Let's go to Houston. Hank. What's your beef, Hank?
Rome, I got a major beef with my sister-in-law who runs a major hospital here in Houston. She had 3 COVID shots that were set to expire at midnight. And instead of offering 2 of those to my wife and myself, she offered it to my wife, her gardener, and his wife. And I will not get over this.
Wow. All right, Hank. Hey, listen, I'm not really sure what the mindset was. I don't know what her thinking was. Maybe she really cares about her landscaping. Maybe she's more concerned about keeping her gardener around than she is you. I don't know, bro. I could see where you might be upset. Like, she had 3 of those COVID shots and she gave it to the gardener instead of you? Either her garden and landscaping is really important to her, or she really doesn't want you around, my guy. Let's go to Frisco. All right, let me say this, Adam. Is it San Francisco or is it Frisco, Texas? Because if you say to them in Frisco, in the Bay Area, to them, that's a reason to go. All right, so this guy just said Frisco. I will acknowledge that, NoCal. You're lying if you say to me you don't hate our guts, but I know you hate being glossed Frisco. It's a reason for them to go. But he told Rit that he's in Frisco, so I'm going to go there right now. Hey, George, what's going on? How are you? Oh, my bad. No. All right, Kathleen, it is you. What's up, Kathleen? Ah, Kathleen's gonzo. George, now I got you. What's your beef?
Hey, Rome. By the way, thanks for the vine. I'm an old school San Francisco guy, and we call it Frisco.
All right,
but
cool.
My beef today is with Tesla guy. When he's not busy driving around town like a bag and parking in people's driveways like a bag, he has to remind you that he owns a Tesla, dropping it every 5 seconds in the conversation. And on top of reminding you that he spent a lot of money on the car, he has to get the vanity plate to go with it. So that's my beef. War Tesla's getting towed out of people's driveways.
I kind of like it. And I know Tesla guy, and I've got friends who are Tesla guy, and they're good guys and good friends. But you're right. There is something to that. There absolutely is something to that. And by the way, the ultimate Tesla guy, Elon Musk, dude, every time this guy opens up his mouth, he either makes me money or makes me lose a lot of money. Hey, Tesla guy, we're trying to make money on that Bitcoin, dude. Just keep buying it. Keep investing in it. Keep saying that we can buy your cars with it and stop saying that it's overpriced. Tesla guy, you're taking food off my plate. 1-800-636-8686. Bro, crash your rockets, not my Bitcoin value. I agree with that last caller. Let's go to Greg in, I just went James Kelly. Let's go to Greg in St. Louis. You're rubbing off on me, head. Greg. Is that St. Louis? Let's go to Greg. Good to have you, Greg. What's your beef?
Hey, Jim, I'm actually in South Carolina, but
I don't care.
You don't like that car.
I don't like that car.
I really don't care where you are, Greg.
Not a very good car.
I just said, Greg, what's your beef? You don't need to tell me where you are. Just tell me your beef. Greg. That went pretty badly. I'm not done yet. I mean, finish strong. 1-800-636-8686. I know Margo in Buffalo will be just fine. Hi, Margo. What's your beef?
The beef is, how many times do I have to repeatedly ask someone, i.e. family, husband, kids, take off your shoes when you come in the door because of the snow, and how many times do I have to walk in that wet spot? How many?
100? 200? I don't know. I don't know, Margo, how many? I give up. How many? How many? I was going to say, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? 1, 2, crunch. I don't know, Margo, how many times? I get it, though. There's nothing worse than telling your family members the same thing over and over and over and over again. I get it. 1-800. Man, I just hope this segment never, ever ends. 1-800-636-8686. Alden in the 401. Alden, what's your beef?
All right, man. I got a few things. I mean, what do I got beef with? I got beef with the dude that looks over in the urinal. What's up with that? Let me just do my thing. I'm at a bar. And then I've also got problems with Boston sports altogether. What are we supposed to do here? Jason Tatum's supposed to be our savior, yet we're hovering around 500. The Red Sox are doing nothing here. What are we, a rebuilding year? I mean, Verdugo is like our savior. I want to know. You tell me, Jim.
My man. Rack him. Nice job, Alden. That's what you do with the beef rack segment. Him. Turn that into W-E-E-I. Yeah, I got beef. I got beef that I'm trying to handle myself at my urinal. I'm in a bar, man. What are you looking over here at? What are you looking over here for? And what? And Verdugo? And what about Jason Tatum, man? What's up? I like that. Good job, Alden. Well done. That's in the 401. We're still moving. East Tennessee is our next stop. You know what I love about beefs? They're everywhere. Every kind of area code, every state, every kind of town. Big city, small city, country, big town, small town. This is fun. East Tennessee, Anthony. Anthony, what's your beef?
Hey, Rome, my beef is when a woman asks the question they already know the answer to, do I look big in this outfit? And they think that we're crazy enough to answer that? No way. No way.
Dude, you got no beef. You figured out the game. You're good. You already know the answer. Like, if you... Why is it a problem to be given a test that you already have the answers to? That's the good place to be. That's where you want to be. The point is when you don't have the answer and she sets you up, and then you get worked. Last one. Let's go to Tucson. John in Tucson. Good to have you. John, what's your beef?
Hey, Rome. My beef is with my wife and my daughter-in-law. Whenever they're cooking a meal and they ask me to grab something real quick on the way home, some kind of ingredient, I wind up feeling like Indiana Jones on some kind of quest to find some ingredient that only they know about.
I feel you. I get that. All right, John, thank you very much. Like some kind of obscure seasoning or something. Like paprika, oregano, turmeric. You ever get that bomb dropped on you? Hey, honey. Hi, sweetheart. What's up? Yeah, I need some turmeric. Hey, listen. While you're out, and by the way, you're like pulling into the driveway. While you're out, can you pick up some wattle seed? Marquez Valdez Scantling is my guest. Marquez, good to have you back. How are you?
Good. How about yourself?
Good, good. Good to talk to you. So let me start first by asking you about the time you spent with USF recently. You were there for spring practices, and I saw you celebrating big plays with wideouts there. First off, what's it like when you go back to practice now that you've made it in the league, and why is it important for you to go back and continue to support those guys and that program?
I mean, I think, you know, it's very beneficial to go back and, you know, show – you know, support and, you know, show some motivation to those guys. Being that I played, you know, right there and was in those same, you know, practice fields in that same locker room doing the same thing that they're doing, that they can, you know, go out and be successful and accomplish every goal that they want to, you know, get done. And I think that's just huge, you know, just to be able to go back and, you know, give back to the school that put me in the position that I'm in.
Marquez Valdez-Scantling joining us. You know, I mentioned your numbers off the top. You had a really productive season. In fact, the most productive season of your career. So when you look back on last year, what kind of thoughts do you have?
I just want to keep growing, man, and keep getting better. You know, left some things out there, fell a little short in an NFC Championship game. against my hometown team. So that one hurt. But just want to keep growing, keep this thing moving forward, keep getting better every year, keep progressing and go out and be the guy that I always dreamt of being.
Oh, so you talked about the NFC Championship game. I'm curious, what do you do with that? For instance, that's the second straight year that you guys go to the NFC title game and fall just short of going to the Super Bowl. How painful is that, and what do you do with the pain? I mean, do you ignore it and block it out, or can you convert that into fuel?
It's tough to, hold on to something like that for so long. Obviously, it's something that's always in the back of your head, but every NFL season is different. Every team is different. You're going to lose some guys, gain some guys, so you're never going to have the exact same opportunity all over again. So you just got to learn from it and figure out what we need to do as a team to get over that hump.
You know, your head coach, Matt LaFleur, I thought, said something very interesting about you. He said, quote, "There is an expectation for him. He set the standard for himself, which is pretty high," end quote. So how would you describe the expectations you have for yourself, and what is that standard that you've set for you?
It's something that kind of what our entire team is about. With the Green Bay Packers, it's always been a standard that's always been set of just excellence. And, for me individually, I always want to go out and be the best in the league. I want to be the best version of myself. I'm the hardest on myself. No critic, no coach, no person, no teammate can be hard on me than I can be on myself. So when I don't make a play or when I, leave something out there or whatever the case is, it's, like I said, it's the standard that I set for myself. So no one's going to be more competitive or more hard on myself than I will be.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling joining us once again. In terms of your game, I mentioned also at the top some of the stats, especially as it relates to a deep ball. It's the second straight season that the team went to the NFC Championship game. However, when you have the kind of speed that you have, I think that people make the mistake of thinking it's just a matter of running right by DBs, but there's so much more to it than having success like that downfield. In your opinion, what does it take to be a deep threat in the NFL?
I think it's a lot of things that go into it. A lot of guys can run fast. And obviously having a MVP quarterback, Hall of Fame quarterback, throwing you the ball makes it a little bit easier. But there's a lot of things that go into it. Just having, a guy like Devontae Adams on the other side that is going to attract attention, and having a great running game and just great concepts to be able to get different guys in positions to be successful. I think that's the biggest thing about, just having success in the NFL because everybody's talented and everybody can do pretty much everything. Obviously, some guys do it better than others. But just having all those things going to, taking into account kind of creates your success.
You mentioned a couple of your teammates, so I want to ask you something. After that NFC Championship game, you tweeted, quote, "Not one bit of Aaron Jones slander will be tolerated. I've watched him give his heart and soul to this team every single second. Best teammate I've ever been around. I'd go to war with him every time, no questions asked." End of quote. I bring this up because this is also a big Aaron Jones house. I've got great, great respect for this guy. What is he like as a teammate? And then how much does it bother you when you see people criticizing him for making a mistake?
It's terrible because, like I said, Aaron Jones is literally one of the best human beings I've ever been around. And you can ask anybody on that team, and they'll say the exact same thing. It's not just, because he's a great, player. He's so much more than just a great player. Obviously, he's one of the best running backs in the league, if not the best. And he deserves every, thing that ever comes his way. But he's a great human being, a great teammate. He's the unsung hero on a lot of those plays down the field. If he's, stepping in the A-gap, taking on a blitzing linebacker, or, Lee blocking down the field, helping his teammates up after they get tackled or whatever. Just things that people don't even realize or recognize on a day-to-day basis. He does it. Yes, sir, yes, ma'am, to every single person in the building, no matter who it is. He's just very respectful, and he just does everything right. And obviously, you're going to make a mistake. We're human. And no person should be, criticized and bashed for a mistake that they make, especially a guy like Aaron who does everything right. And he's, like I said, he's given his heart and soul to this team and has never complained about anything. I think he's just, like I said, one of the best teammates I've ever been around. And I don't think that anyone can top that. I think anyone who's down that organization will say the exact same thing about him.
See, it's the thing. This is why I like having these conversations with you, because you always show up like this, and you're real, and you're honest. And then even on social media, on Twitter, you'll show up the same way. As an example, you recently said that you received death threats on Twitter after the Colts game. Somebody recently tweeted, quote, "Why do grown-ass men cry about a couple of death threats when they're making millions every year?" End of quote. I'm really curious, what was your reaction when you saw that particular tweet?
Honestly, I was taken back by it just because of the person who said it. For him to also be an athlete, you know, it was just mind-blowing to me that they still look at us as we're not humans just because we make a good amount of money, you know, playing a sport. You know, we're still people. You know, we don't deserve to be threatened over a game of entertainment for other people. You know, obviously this is a game that we love, that we put our hearts and souls into. But at the end of the day, it's a game, and it's for entertainment for other people. And for anyone to receive a death threat over work is not okay. And I think people need to realize that, you know, we're still humans. We still have emotions. We still, you know, have issues that we deal with on an everyday basis. No matter how much money you make in this game, it doesn't change that the fact that we're still humans. And, you know, that's the issue that a lot of fans don't realize, that they get on, you know, these free apps and say whatever they want to say with no consequences and, you know, no repercussions of it. And I think that people need to, you know, be able to understand that you can't just say whatever you want to say because you can say it behind your phone without, you know, any consequences happening. And obviously it's unfortunate because Twitter is free. You know, if Twitter costs money or costs a tweet, people wouldn't tweet crazy things like they do. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's just what it boils down to, is that people should treat people how, you know, they would want to be treated. That's something we learned when we were in kindergarten, you know, the golden rule. And, you know, it still holds true to this day.
I agree with you. Really quickly, you also recently reposted that video of that camper trying to go in on Cam Newton, and you had a message as well there. What did you make of that? What did you think when you saw that, and what was the message you wanted to share?
You know, like I said, when I was, you know, in high school or in, you know, just growing up, I would have loved to have Cam Newton come, you know, or a player like Cam Newton come to my 7-on-7s or my practices or whatever. You know, for him to be, you know, in the position that he's in, and everything that he's accomplished, and still being able to go out and give back to, you know, these camps. He's been doing it for years. And I would have been a sponge, you know, asking him whatever questions I could ask him. Even if it's, you know, simple questions, or, "Hey, Cam, can you just sit and talk to me real quick, or just give me a minute of your time, or, you know, just tell me whatever things you did." I couldn't be that guy to, you know, chastise, you know, a guy who's done everything that I want to do. You know, won a MVP, you know, won a Heisman, you know, broke all these records and did everything, been to a Super Bowl. Like, I don't know. I couldn't be that guy. And I think it's kind of what our society has gone to, is, you know, being these trolls. And, you know, that's what the internet has created. And they don't even realize the damages that they're creating or the opportunities that they're missing out on.
So well said. You're a legendary gamer. You just announced that you've started an esports team. Lay this out for me. What is this all about?
I've always been involved in video games. Ever since I was a little kid, you know, playing video games with my dad and playing with my friends and whatnot. And so it's always been a hobby of mine, something that I do, you know, pretty much every day when I'm not, you know, doing anything football related or traveling or, you know, hanging out with the dog. It's video games. And so just being able to, you know, I've always wanted to be a part of an esports team. And now that I have a platform and, you know, some resources, you know, like, why not create my own? And I think that's just really cool. I think with COVID hitting, it kind of made everyone, like, stay in the house. And they realized that video games is not just something that people just do. It's a lifestyle. It's, you know, people's profession. It's people put a lot of time and effort into it to be good at the game. And I think that's something that's really important for people to see, that, you know, there's other things out there that you can do to be successful in life. And I don't want to just limit myself and just being a professional athlete. And, you know, I have a very entrepreneurial mindset. I learned that from my mom and my dad. And I just want to, you know, be able to use all the resources that I have to go out and do things that I love to do.
I like it. He led the league in average yards per reception this past year. Played his college ball at South Florida. He is the co-founder of Trench Made Gaming. It is a brand new esports team and a good friend of the program, Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Marquez, congratulations on that startup. I'm eager to see how that plays out, and it's always good to have you on the show. Thanks so much for doing that. Great interview.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good night now!